most people still think that Bitcoin is an investment vehicle and they're going to sell the top, buy the lows, whatever.
Go and look at the price chart for the last 10, 15 years, right? And tell me how the hell you lost money on this thing.
If they admit to a Bitcoin reserve, they publicly announce to the world that the dollar is and failed spectacularly.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Rick and Tony here with me. Gents, let's jump right into the news. We've got the price is dipping. Hang on, I'm going to check this real quick. We're at 81,000 or so at the moment, and the fear and greed index, which God only knows exactly how this is calculated, is at 10. So we're in a point of extreme fear. Man, could you imagine telling the maxis from 15 years ago that one day people were going to be freaking out when Bitcoin dropped to $80,000? Rick, I'll let you take this one first, man. This sentiment, I don't know. I just don't feel this way, but apparently a lot of people are fearful. What do you think?
Oh God, Michael, I'm absolutely terrified, man. Like before this podcast started, I was actually like just under my bed, just weeping uncontrollably.
Well, that's it.
I mean, look, you know, let's be real. Pretty savage dip this week. Like, I think, what are we, 28, almost 30% down from the highs of like 109, 110K or wherever we reached, right? So like, man, a 30% dip's like, you know, well, it's certainly not unheard of in Bitcoin, but everybody notices it, right? Which is why the price is the thing that's on everybody's lips this week. But look, I mean, the thing that's maybe like a silver lining for the Bitcoin maxis is, wow, when Bitcoin drops 30%, the altcoins, I mean, it is absolute unfair. Like, I don't know. Did you see what happened to Trump coin? My God, that thing is just absolutely destroyed. There's never ever. Well, look, I'll end up being wrong on this, but that thing's never coming back. Like, basically, the president of the free world dropped a pump and dump. I mean, I still can't believe half of this stuff's real. It's absolutely bonkers. But look, all right, jokes aside, right, there might be people out there or maybe even people listening to this podcast who, you know, get a bit nervous about the price drops. And especially if you've only just come into Bitcoin, say, the last year or 24 months, right? Like, I've been there when I first got into Bitcoin a long time ago, right? Like, these dips, if they're new to you, they're savage, like a gut punch, right? The things that I would say I would take away from it is like, look, the way I would always look at it is, have the fundamentals changed at all? Is Bitcoin broken? Has anything actually changed? Like, not really, right? Nothing's changed. They're still going to print loads of money. The dollar's still worthless. What sparks these sell-offs? I couldn't really tell you. I don't really know. You know, we've had hacks recently. We've had presidents of countries launching meme coins. Like, you know, this creates a lot of noise and chaos in the market. People lose money all over the place. But, you know, you've got to look at Bitcoin with like a longer time horizon than that. I mean, you know, here's another piece of advice I would like to give people is like, go and have a sit and think about all the influencers, right? Ever since, when did the ETFs launch? In Jan 24, right?
That's right.
Man. All the influencers running around on Twitter going, oh, it's going to be 300K. Like, who's that guy, British Hoddle, right? Like, he was out here, oh, it's going to be 350K in like 10 days. I've definitely got some receipts saved from that because I saw it. I thought, no chance, right? And then obviously, like, Donald Trump's going to launch a strategic Bitcoin reserve on day one and we're going to be at 2 million by the afternoon. Like, look. It's really easy to understand what's going on here. Most influencers permanently bull post because that's what gives them the most engagement. And that's what gets them the most money each month when they get paid by Elon. Because bull posts are like really, really popular. But the problem is, if your feed is filled with that nonsense, it kind of seeps into your brain that Bitcoin is up only forever and will never, you know, it's going to go up in a straight line. And that's going to lead you to do all sorts of stupid things like invest more than you can afford to lose so that when the price goes down, you're forced to sell and take a haircut and all this stuff. It's very, very simple. Just save what you can afford to save without getting over your skis and look at the long-term picture. I mean, go and look at the price chart for the last 10, 15 years, right? And tell me how the hell you lost money on this thing. Right? Because it's all in one direction. So don't trade it, buy and hold it. And what a fantastic opportunity if you haven't got as much Bitcoin as you want. I woke up with a spring in my step. You should too, right? Cheap sats. Happy days.
Yeah, you said something really important there, Rick. You said save what you can afford, and you didn't say invest. And I think this is the big, like, most people still think that Bitcoin is an investment vehicle and they're going to sell the top, buy the lows, whatever. What you are purchasing when you purchase Bitcoin, this is my view. You guys can rag on it or tweak it or apply nuance, but Bitcoin is the future of money. You are purchasing the best form of money ever to exist before almost anyone else. You know, you're in the 1% of people who have figured this out if you have identified it as money. And so it's going to accumulate much more value here in the coming years than it will 50 or 100 years from now, right? Like the compound annual growth rate in terms of purchasing power will be less in the future, presumably when we have a Bitcoin standard, it's less volatile, or the dollar denominated number is less volatile because people will always be volatile. And that's what causes these swings is that people they panic, someone got in over their head, you know, like it's the same thing over and over. So quit viewing Bitcoin as an investment, start viewing it as the future of money and how long it takes for it to be that future money, like on a mass scale where you can just go to the coffee shop and use Bitcoin on Lightning to purchase. I don't know, but like, that's what you're saving for. You're not investing it to turn a short-term dollar profit or euro profit or what have you. Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, you guys are absolutely spot on, man. Bitcoin already is the world reserve currency. To get to that level of conviction, you have to really understand what it is that you're buying. The problem is most people coming into this space now are buying it because somebody told them, or they heard some rumor, or they heard some news, or Larry Fink spoke of it, and now they're FOMOing into it for the wrong reasons. They're coming into it for number go up, making dollar profits and what have you. 99% of these people that are losing money right now believe that the dollar is still money. That is fundamentally the problem, because if they understood that this has zero value, then they wouldn't be looking at Bitcoin as an investment. It should be looked at exactly like you said. It's like you're upgrading worthless paper to something, to sound money, to something that actually has value. And you don't need it to go from, you know, where it is now to a million tomorrow for it to win. It's already winning, because all roads will eventually lead to the only money that no one can corrupt. Because as things progress and the money printer eventually goes on full throttle again, everybody's purchasing power is going to get completely massacred. And this time around, the rate of that massacre is going to accelerate. It's no longer like a small percentage. The numbers will start growing. Like, I remember back in Lebanon, man, like, it didn't take long. It took like a matter of days before things went from costing $50 to costing $750. It wasn't a slow progression. It was like almost seemingly overnight. You have to believe that something like this is coming. If you don't, and you're just taking life, you know, very casually thinking, you know, everything's going to be okay because so-and-so is in power and so is making these decisions, you're in for a very, very bad rude awakening. So do the work. Understand that Bitcoin, you know, is not an investment. Bitcoin is your lifeline. It will become the only money that anybody is going to want.
Yeah, well said. All right, let's jump into our next piece of news. So the Bitcoin ETFs are hit by a record $1 billion outflow in a single day. I think this was yesterday. I think this is a great segue from the points we've been making. If you first of all, if you hold an ETF, I put you in one of two camps. You've either got funds tied up in fiat investments that you have conviction in Bitcoin, and that's really the only option that you have, that or like MicroStrategy or one of these others. Okay, so let's set those people aside for a moment. Everyone else sees a number go up technology, period. They don't own actual Bitcoin, and maybe they don't even realize that there's this incredible distinction between freedom money and a paper IOU. And it's not even really an IOU. It's an IOU for more dollars. It's not an IOU for Bitcoin because there's no in-kind redemption on the ETFs. But this to me just, I think, highlights and sort of exemplifies the people who, most of the people who are buying the ETFs are viewing it as an investment and not as the future form of money. Tony, why don't you rag on the ETFs for a minute?
Well, 99% of folks in ETFs absolutely understand nothing. I mean, most of these people, you have to understand, are in a certain age group. And they're just following, you know, the habits that they've been doing all along. Their financial advisor calls them, tells them, this is the next big thing. Allocate a certain percentage of money in it. That's all they're doing. They're on autopilot because of that recommendation. Absolutely none of them, I'm sure, none of them have done 5 minutes worth of reading besides like, oh, okay, it's this new internet money thing. That's about as, you know, deep as they've gotten on the Bitcoin thing. And so when things go slightly off track, all of these emotional beings, you know, they panic. And so they dump the money thinking, you know, if they've made a profit in dollars, again, they're thinking in dollars. Remember, none of these guys understand fundamentally money because they're still basing it on what they've known their entire life. Nothing's changed for them. So they're dumping it thinking they're going to retain whatever money they've made on that trade whenever, you know, since they came in up to now. Yeah, I've made money. Get me out of this thing. Let's lock in these profits. They've done absolutely nothing. That's why you're seeing a sell-off. But I'm happy this is happening because this will force a redistribution of Bitcoin, hopefully, into those that I didn't get a chance to get to buy it at these prices. It's a gift. You know, like once you understand Bitcoin, these prices are not, like nothing's changed. Like it's, Bitcoin isn't failing because the price is going down. This is like a lot of people believe that automatically. This is why they freeze when they think when prices are going down. And they also freeze when prices are going up. They complain it's too expensive. So you have to understand what it is that you're dealing with. Bitcoin's top is nowhere near where it's going. And Bitcoin's bottom, there is no, like there is, it's not going back down to zero. That is a mathematical certainty. It might drop a little bit, but there are too many big players now that understand this. There's a limit to how low it's going to go. And the more time progresses, that limit's going to remain higher and higher and higher. Because again, the wrong people, unfortunately, are starting to understand this. And all this FUD, all this nonsense that is scaring away the suckers out there, I call them suckers because if you don't do the work, that's essentially what you are. You're going to have less of them because, you know, eventually redistribution from dumb money to smart money. And at some point, the smart money is going to lock it in. And that's it. That's where, you know, you start seeing the crazy numbers on the screen. So you need to do the work. ETF holders, none of them do the work, or at least most of them don't do the work. They rely on he said, she said, financial advisors, old habits. They're so far away from Twitter, social media, the type of content that we consume, the type of content that, you know, like educated people put out. These guys don't know any of it. He said, he told me, that's what I'm doing. That's as far as they go. So these are the results that you're going to get.
I think that's a really good way of framing it. I think this, I shared on X the other day, I said that it's sad how many people are $30 and 304 pages away from allocating to Bitcoin. I posted a picture of the Bitcoin standard by Saifedean Ammous. And I really think that's true. I think that most people are listening to a financial advisor who has not read that book or any Bitcoin book. And they haven't done that reading. If they did that reading, they would probably be less inclined toward, they might start with the ETFs because they understand like the upward trajectory. But I think eventually you have to start asking yourself, you can't unsee that sort of knowledge, right? And I think eventually that those are the sorts of, you know, learning wins that people will have that lead them down the path toward, you know, buying freedom money and not allocating to ETFs and then not also not selling and dumping because they panic when the fear, what is it? The fear and greed index hits 10 or whatever. Rick, where's your head at?
I don't have like loads to add to this, right? Like it doesn't really surprise me that loads of money flowed out of the Bitcoin ETFs because they're relatively new and it's a relatively new class of buyers that went and bought those products, right? And most people, unfortunately, have to go through this process with Bitcoin a couple times where, you know, they're new to it, they buy in, Bitcoin's pretty crazy and volatile and you know, it's not for the faint of heart. And if it's the first time you've experienced that sort of thing, like it scares you. And so you quickly sell and panic. And, you know, I mean, can you imagine how many millions of stories there are out there now of people who sold their Bitcoin because they were worried, like at $2,000, $10,000, $20,000, whatever, and then regret that 2 or 3, 4 years later, right? It really is a case of sort of time perspective and education. Like you boys have alluded to, the guys buying the ETFs, they haven't gone down the rabbit hole, right? Like, they've not even bought real Bitcoin. They've just bought ETF shares, you know, which just speculates on the price. So I think, of course, they're going to be hyper-focused on the price. And so when things look a little bit shaky, they quickly panic and run for the exits. But yeah, I mean, I would just say like the funniest thing about all this is when you zoom out, because if you look at the price chart in October, we were in, well, first of all, when the ETFs launched, the price was around somewhere in the 40Ks, right? And only last October, it was like around the 60Ks, right? That was only October. It's only the end of February. Like, guys, come on. We're not even done 6 months here. The price is still way higher and you're really upset, you know? So. People just, you know, it doesn't matter how much content you make. It doesn't seem to matter how many tweets. Like, we all have been saying this over again ad nauseum for years. But whether or not that content reaches those people, probably not, because they just go to their financial advisor, right? But like, zoom out, look at the chart. We were at 60K in October. Calm down. Everything's fine. Like, we're all going to be okay. And, you know, all right, $1 billion flowed out of the ETFs. I mean, maybe that's because Plan B realized, oh, maybe I shouldn't have put my Bitcoin in the ETF, and he's taken it back out again. I don't know. Hopefully some of these people are cashing out and buying real Bitcoin. But I'm with Tony. The thing I hope most for is when you look at the distribution of Bitcoin ownership, most of it is in private hands. And that's a brilliant thing. I'm very, very happy to see that. So, hey, look, if all the ETFs get depleted, there's a veritable army of sovereign Bitcoiners out there all too willing to hoover up those sats. So great news, great news. If it flows out of the ETFs and into someone, some private citizen's hands, I think that's a big win for all of us. And hey, listen, I reckon, 2 years from now, If we're on this podcast 2 years from now, what prices are we going to be talking about? Because I got my money on the fact that it'll be a damn sight higher than it is now.
Yeah, Bitcoin crashed to $500,000. Or Bitcoin crashes to $1.5 million.
And I'll be back under my bed, Tony, terrified again.
It's coming. I'm trying to find, someone posted on Twitter a day or two ago, something about like, I wish I could find this. They commented like, you know, all the people who are excited about the crash or say that it doesn't bother them are LARPing. And I was like, first of all, today's payday for me. So I got a lot more sats than I would have, you know, a month ago or whatever. I don't even keep track of what the dates are. But also, like, it's not like I'm selling or something and now I can't sell it for as much. Like, I just don't understand why people would need to pretend like this doesn't bother them. It just shouldn't. But I think, you know, the ETFs are, I can't remember which one you just said it, but it's a brand new cohort of buyers. And the vast majority, certainly on the retail side, just have no idea what it is that they bought exactly. It's probably a small allocation, and now they're just panicking. All right, let's keep moving. This was Senator Cynthia Lummis, who is supposedly Bitcoin's greatest advocate in Congress. Here's what we learned from yesterday's hearing. So this was like the digital assets subcommittee or something. She said, most digital assets are not legally securities under the Howey test. The United States is behind other countries in creating laws for digital assets. I think what we need is more laws, guys, where we just don't have enough. And stablecoins will bring our payment system into the 21st century. I mean, my takeaway is I think she's wrong about point one. We are behind on creating laws, but that assumes that we should have some, which I don't agree with, and we don't need stable coins. Like, we're building on Bitcoin, the better form of money. So Rick, I know you have some thoughts on this because we were talking offline. What's your reaction to her comment?
I straight up, right, the first thing is I really dislike these hearings in, you know, about digital assets, because it means that I have to then go and read all of the absolute nonsense, uninformed takes from these government officials talking about something they don't understand, they don't study, but for some reason think that they should be in control of, right? Like that whole hearing, I mean, it was painful reading, right? But basically what I took out of it was they never talked about Bitcoin. They just talked about stable coins, right? And USDT and all this sort of stuff. And I couldn't be any less interested in the dollar. They kept banging on about like how USDT or stable coins should be backed one-to-one. And I'm thinking, am I the only one sitting here going, well, what the hell's backing the dollar? Right? Like, what are you talking about? What planet are you? Right. Sorry. I'm like trying not to swear here because it is so brain dead, some of this stuff. And then they got on to like whining about self-hosted wallets because they're saying, well, you know, it's great that we have these centralized exchanges because we KYC them on the way in and we check that they're not sending it to sanctioned addresses on the way out. But guys, there's this big, big problem, which is like we can't track if a self-hosted wallet sends to another self-hosted wallet and we lose sight of everything. And I'm like, yeah, good. Like, this is the whole point. We're trying to build a financial system that doesn't include you people controlling us and monitoring every little thing that I do. So it's kind of like, look, just cry harder. Like, we don't want to be tracked. And if anything, that just highlights the problem with stablecoins is, you know, that like Tony keeps saying, that they're not far away from being a full-blown CBDC, right? And ultimately, they're pegged to the value of a dying fiat currency. So for some unknown reason, how are we here in 2025 when Bitcoin is 16 years old? Is completely revolutionizing what we understand about money, about transferring value, all of these things. And this group of absolute muppets, right, are sitting around talking about some synthetic dollar, how they can track it, what they can do with it. And man, if you read that article as well, they even start talking about, well, because, you know, we've got evidence that these stable coins are helping fund Russian smugglers and Hamas and all these other organizations. And listen, when you hear them talking like that, that's a cue to be like, okay, right, they're talking absolute rubbish, right? And they love AML and KYC rules, right? Because they want to control everything about you. And they make the argument that these are in place to protect you from whatever Russian smugglers. is going to come and get you somehow, Michael. I don't know, right? But that's the argument they make. The obvious question that anyone with a brain in their head should be asking is like, well, you've got all these AML and you know, KYC rules in traditional finance, but it didn't stop the whole US government ripping off their taxpayers for years on end and stealing all the taxpayers' money. It also might not help when we find out that you've got all these AML and KYC rules and there's no gold in Fort Knox. Like, you guys are LARPs, right? Like, they're not here. They're not on our team. They're not here to try and promote Bitcoin. And I think a lot of Bitcoiners need to give their head a wobble and wake up. Like, why are you celebrating these people? Why are you cheering them on? These people are trying to build the cage that they want you to live inside, right? They are not on your team. So just because they might wave a piece of paper around saying, oh, the US government might buy Bitcoin, they are not Bitcoiners. They don't want you to have freedom, and they certainly don't want you transacting without them having some sort of say in it. So I hope it's a wake-up call to people who have been cheering about the SBR, cheering about Senator Loomis and all this sort of nonsense, realizing that, like, man, you're wasting your time thinking these people are going to save you. They have little interest in you. You have to save yourself. You have to work on your own Bitcoin strategy. And to hell with these people, because, man, they don't care about you. They don't care about you.
The answer to your mystery lies in the comment that you made. Anyone with half a brain. You know, statistically, if you look at, you know, what's going on, you have your answer right there. Are you honestly surprised a politician lied, right? Is this like such a miracle? Like, oh my gosh, it's never happened. They actually lied. They promised us something, and then now all of a sudden are completely off-roading in a different direction. There's no Bitcoin reserve. If they admit to a Bitcoin reserve, they publicly announce to the world that the dollar is shit and failed spectacularly. What politician is going to do this? That is like suicide. So how do you logically expect them to announce something that's going to put out this message globally? They're never going to do it. The stablecoin bill, that's exactly what it is. It's to keep themselves relevant, to keep the dollar's life extended for as long as possible. It's a CBDC whose on switch just hasn't been turned on. That's exactly what it is. There's nothing else. And exactly like you said, backed one-to-one with what? What, you have like the worthless dollars, you know, that that are worth nothing? That's what you're backing it up one-to-one with? Like, who cares? Like, if you back it up with something that's worth zero, it's still worth zero, right? So the American people, you need to screw their heads on right and stop believing the mumbo jumbo that these people are spewing out. You don't need them. You know, for the first time in history, something was invented, was created in 2008 to put an end to this. But yet, you know, like that experiment when they put fleas in that jar and they closed the jar, then after a while, the fleas stopped jumping, even though they opened the cover. That's what a lot of Americans are doing. The cover is open, you can opt out, but yet you choose to remain inside that jar because you think it's safer, because you believe the lies and the bullshit that these people are have gotten, you know, amazingly good at, you know, telling you, and you keep believing it. That needs to stop. Yeah. And until that does, nothing really will change.
No, I completely agree. I think, and like I've been very open, like through banter, like my opinion on a lot of things has changed. Like when the strategic, I mean, even just what, 8 months ago or whatever, when the strategic reserve was announced or floated, or the stockpile at the Bitcoin conference, you know, I was like, oh yeah, like this sounds great. Like finally we have, you know, a pro Bitcoin president. And so like I keep having to like dig deeper and kind of weed out these past biases that I have as I have come to new conclusions. I think Rick would probably argue based on some of our offline comments and discussion that I still have a little ways to go. But I guess my encouragement to people would be, I've been there and I've felt, you know, excited about Lummis and excited about Trump or RFK or, you know, whatever. But if you just allow the course of history to play out, I mean, we see the same stories over and over again. And it's just political rug pull after political rug pull after political rug pull. And, you know, we were talking about like the Epstein files. We're not going to get into that. That's not our bread and butter. But like it was all this anticipation that they're going to release the Epstein files. And at least round one, I mean, maybe this time it's going to be different. But at least round one was incredibly disappointing to anyone who wanted to actually learn something about what was going on there. And the same thing is true. They're talking about. They're not talking about Bitcoin as a strategic reserve asset. They're talking about strengthening the dollar and bringing our dollar payment system into the 21st century and do all these nonsense tokens past the Howey test. Like, who cares? Who cares? Like, my tax dollars are paying for that subcommittee. I want Doge to go after that subcommittee and disband it because they're wasting my tax dollars talking about something that does not matter at all, right? So yeah, I mean, I could go on and on. Let's get to our last topic here. We're starting to run low on time. So BTC Sessions tweeted this. So this was, this is a pretty big story. So the IMF El Salvador rather got a loan from the IMF for another $1.4 billion with further Bitcoin restrictions. Everything I see seems to indicate that they're not going to be able to buy Bitcoin as readily or maybe at all. I'm not quite sure what the implications are. And Ben says that either El Salvador is going to rug pull the IMF or El Salvador is going to rug pull Bitcoiners. I know my thoughts on this. I'll leave that for the end. Tony, I'd be curious to hear what you're thinking here.
Man, I have mixed feelings about this. On the surface, it's very disappointing, obviously, because, you know, he was off to such a, you know, a magnanimous start. And even I thought, like, wow, it's like almost like miraculous. We have someone saying the right things and doing the right things. And, you know, all of a sudden, you hear this. Like, why would you, you know, sign a deal with the devil? Like, what's really behind it? So, you can easily like shoot shots at him and call him this and that. But, you know, like, I mean, I thought about it a bit more. Like, you don't really know what happens behind closed doors, you know, in these circles. Maybe he was threatened. Like, how do you know, right? Like, maybe there's something bigger that nobody knows about that led to this decision. And you'll never know, because this is not something that's going to be, you know, publicly released. But I mean, to start off the way he did and to end up the way he is now, to me, raises a lot of question marks that unfortunately I don't have an answer to. And so I don't want to just jump to any conclusions. I'm sure he's an amazing guy with great intentions. But it is what it is now. So how that plays out, it's, you know, time will tell. I'm not a big fan of that decision. But the silver lining in all this is that it really doesn't matter. You know, like the world problems, all of them, nothing will be fixed as long as the separation of money and state is not guaranteed. But even though that's not going to happen overnight, if enough people adopt the Bitcoin lifestyle, peer-to-peer technology lives on, no matter who says what. You cannot stop it. So it will continue to exist in parallel. Whether, you know, it's accepted or not doesn't matter. It'll still thrive in the same way as peer-to-peer music, file sharing, and movie sharing is still at all-time highs. If that wasn't stopped, nothing's going to stop the peer-to-peer sharing of money, something that 8 billion people need. It's not an optional item. You need it to live, to survive. So that's my two cents on this, and let's see.
Yeah, it seems like a roller coaster with El Salvador. I think I'll make my comment, because I want Rick to end this, because I think you'll have an interesting take. My comment is that El Salvador cannot rug pull me. El Salvador can only rug pull people who have put their faith or confidence related to Bitcoin in El Salvador or in Bukele. And if you keep Bitcoin in cold storage, you secure it properly, you view it as long-term savings, and you're willing to weather dips, 30% dips like we've seen, or, you know, nation states getting into it and then capitulating because of, you know, threats or a change of course, whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. You're not going to get rug pulled. Like, I won't feel rug pulled at all if El Salvador comes out tomorrow and says, we're going to issue our own meme coin. Like, is that good? Okay, good for them. Have fun. I'm going to keep doing my thing, and I'm going to keep doing, you know, putting my savings into freedom money. So, Rick, what are your, what's your takeaway here?
Yeah, I think it'd be really easy to just start like attacking Bukele and sort of saying like, oh, you know, how could you do this? But I tend to agree with Tony, right? There's so much about like, it's like, what do any of us know about leading a nation or what's involved in that, right? And, you know, I don't know the full extent of El Salvador's finances, right? Like, I don't know how much debt they're already in, right? Almost every nation's in an enormous amount of debt, and you have to service that debt. And El Salvador has needs, right? They have infrastructure needs. They're trying to grow a country. I mean, for all I know, Bukele's playing some magnificent 4D chess, right? Because maybe he thinks, well, do you know what? I'll take a $1.4 billion loan from the IMF now. I'll go and build a load of bridges and roads and infrastructure and make my country better and try and help the people with it. And if I'm right about Bitcoin, then this loan is going to hyperinflate away to nothing anyway when the dollar dies. And I'm still sitting on a nice big stack of Bitcoin for my nation. So maybe he wins twice, right? Like, while the dollar's still worth something, he borrows it, he fixes his country with it. Then the loan's really easy to pay off with half a Bitcoin because the dollar dies and Bitcoin rips. And then he's still sitting on his Bitcoin stack and everything's all good. Like, I don't know. That could totally be a strategy. And if that does happen, then 5 years from now, we'll all look back and call him a genius, right? I mean, look, you know, yeah, it's disappointing that.
Rick, it almost sounds like you're giving a politician the benefit of the doubt. I just want to make sure that we can you affirm or deny that.
You got me. But I guess what I don't want to do is try and second guess what he's doing, because I have no idea. I mean, look, if, like Tony says, you dance with the devil, you got to be careful, right? But like, I don't know. Maybe Bukele's got the moves. I don't know, right? And to come back to your point, Michael, like, I don't trust any politicians. I don't know how anyone can reach adulthood in these sort of times and still trust any politician. Like, but to me, that is completely mental. Right. Because I haven't, in my entire life, I haven't seen an honest politician or anyone do anything for my benefit. But I think, you know, Bukele's done more for his country than Keir Starmer's ever going to do for the UK. You know, I got to give him some credit on that. And ultimately, like, going back to Tony's point, right, like, it's freedom money. Like, you can't stop it. So Bukele can do whatever he wants, right? Maybe his nation state stops buying Bitcoin. But you can buy it, right? Like, you can buy it. The people who live in El Salvador can buy it if they want. And any Bitcoin that Bukele buys and puts in their national stockpile is Bitcoin that you're not going to get access to. And he's not going to share it with you. So, you know, you see it all over Bitcoin Twitter. We kind of touched on it with the Loomis bill and the SBR. And like every week we're talking about what some politician is or isn't doing or saying or whatever. And I think, you know, a lot of Bitcoiners would probably benefit if they could sort of like evolve beyond caring what those people are doing and focus more on what they're doing for themselves. Because like no one's going to come and gift you Bitcoin. And when politicians stack it, they're not doing so with you in mind. So you've got to sort yourself out, right? So I don't know. Hopefully it all goes well. As for, I don't know if I agree with like the idea that he's rug pulling Bitcoiners. I'm not sure what he exactly promised them anything, right? That he never promised he wouldn't take an IMF loan. He never promised that they'd buy Bitcoin forever. I tend to not worry about these things.
Yeah, I think Ben's probably referring to more of like an ideological rug pull here, that Bitcoiners thought like this was Bitcoin country and it's never, you know. But hey, even if you guys, your more optimistic takes on Bukele are right and that he is an awesome guy with awesome intentions, he's playing 4D chess, he's not going to live forever. And that's why I think tying your wagon to any politician or political movement is short-sighted, because, you know, we don't know what comes when Bukele's gone. I mean, he could die tomorrow. He could be unelected in the next, someone else could be elected here soon. Like we just have no idea. And so like live your own life, strive towards self-sovereignty, buy Bitcoin, hold it for the long term. Like it really doesn't have to be much more complicated than that. And I think that's a good segue into concluding the show. If you need to properly secure your Bitcoin, which everyone does, do it with the Bitcoin way. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you do it the right way. The first time, it doesn't matter what any politician does, says, you can hold your own wealth. We also help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones, and we have a Plan B residency option. We really are the one-stop shop for all of your self-sovereignty needs. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Gents, as always, thank you so much. This was a really fun one. Lots of great content to cover.
Thank you, Michael. It was great.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers, guys.